Behold, he comes.
Welcome to The Watchman. Get ready for awakening teachings on the end times, Bible prophecy, and on the times and seasons in which we live. The King is coming.
Good evening and welcome to The Watchman. Today, as we continue with our study of the book of Revelation and some of the interesting things that we expect in the times ahead, in the times to come. And last week we talked about the six seals, and I told you the seals are the long story, the story of the unveiling of the spirit of the Antichrist, and in different formats all the way until the end of the age, which is the sixth seal. And the sixth seal is when Jesus Christ comes and reigns on earth, and that's the final seal. And the sixth seal is the seventh seal is actually like it's a prelude to the seven trumpets. So in actual sense, the sixth seal, the seventh trumpet, and the seventh bowl of judgment coincide and are the same, and are at a time that is called the day of the Lord, which is the day when the Lord comes to judge here on earth. That is not the rapture. The rapture is before that, but it's called the day of the Lord. So now we know that. And now we know that the sixth seal in Revelation chapter 6, verse 12 up to 17, and the seventh trumpet, and the seventh bowl of judgment in Revelation chapter 16, all of them coincide, and all of them are the same thing. Okay, that's the day of the Lord. Now we are moving on today to the trumpets, because last time we talked about the seals, and I started from the first seal all the way up to the sixth. So now you know what the seals represent, and now when you read that, you will know exactly what they are. Now last time we also talked about the sixth trumpet, which is the second last trumpet, and I told you that that trumpet is the one which creates a war that is called the River Euphrates War. And I told you about the 200 million people that will attack the mountains of Israel from the Golan Heights. And they will come from different countries, so many Muslim countries. They will come from Turkey, they will come from Iraq, Iran too, as well as so many of the countries surrounding that place, Syria and all that. We know that. But then also, there will be Russia. And there is a possibility of there also being China. So we know that that is going to happen. And it's going to be 200 million people that will attack the mountains of Israel. And now we know, I told you last time, that there is some kind of prelude to it in terms of what is now happening around the Middle East. There's a lot of tensions, and Iran is very heavily involved. And I told you that it's very likely happening when Iran makes a move to attack Israel. And then Israel feels that they have the need to retaliate. Okay, so we know this, and we know that that will be a nuclear, some kind of nuclear war, not some kind of a major nuclear war that will kill one third of mankind. We're talking about 2.5 billion people dying in a war which is not going to last very long. It's going to be very short and very brief. And so that's the sixth trumpet. The seventh trumpet, we talked about it, is the coming of the Lord, when the kingdoms of this world are the kingdoms of our God and of his Christ. I'll read briefly Revelation 11, chapter 11, verse 15. The seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, "The kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." And the 24 elders who sat before God in their thrones fell on their faces and worshipped God, saying, "We give thanks, O Lord God Almighty, the one who is and who was and who is to come, because you have taken your great power and reigned. The nations were angry, your wrath has come, and the time of the dead that they should be judged. And you should reward your servants, the prophets and the saints, and those who fear your name, small and great, and destroy those who destroy the earth." Then the temple of God was opened in heaven, and the ark of his covenant was seen in the temple, and there were lightnings and noises and thunderings and an earthquake. I told you what that means, the seventh trumpet. And also I told you what the sixth trumpet means, which is that River Euphrates War in previous messages. So now we'll go backwards, since we know the seventh and the sixth trumpet. And so now we'll go to the fifth trumpet, which is in Revelation chapter 9. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. A star fell from heaven to earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. I want you to consider these words, because the key to understanding prophecy really is to relate it, the language of what was happening at the time, and try to relate it with what currently is. So, you know, you kind of find some kind of relatability in a way that it might sound in a way far-fetched, but it's as far-fetched as the year 96 AD, the first century, is from where we currently are, the 21st century. So you have to understand what all this is about. So if some of these things look far-fetched, it's because people were using a language back then, which we have to relate to the language we use right now. People were using references back then, which we have to relate to references we use right now. And those people who wrote this, for instance, John the Revelator, God shows him things as they will be today. So he kind of takes him ahead in time and shows him what is happening today. And John has to describe it in the language that he had at the time, what language he could use at the time. So there are things you would not expect, but you have to figure out, if I was a man living in the year 96 AD and I saw certain things that, let's say, I know happened today, how would I describe them using the language that was there at the time? So now that helps you understand Bible prophecy. And that will help you see that even if some of our references here might look like they are far-fetched, they are not, because we are talking things which are almost 2,000 years apart. Anyhow, then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw, now this is the fifth trumpet. We know the seventh, we know the sixth. Now, what's the fifth? Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star falling from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke rose out of the pit, like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Then out of the smoke, locusts came upon the earth, and to them were given power as the scorpions of the earth. They were commanded not to harm the grass or the earth or any green thing or any tree, but only those men who do not have the seal of God in their foreheads. And they were not given authority to kill them, but to torment them for 5 months. Their torment was like the torment of a scorpion when it strikes a man. In those days, men will seek death and will not find it. They will desire to die, and death will flee from them. The shape of the locusts was like horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns of something like gold, and their faces were like the faces of a man. They had hair like a woman's hair, and their teeth were like the teeth of lions. And they had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots with many horses running into battle. They had tails like scorpions, and there were stings in their tails. Their power was to hurt men 5 months, and they had a king over them, the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon, but in Greek he has the name Apollyon. One war is past. Behold, still two more wars are coming after these things. So I've read the whole sixth trumpet, but now let's try to break it down. But let me start by telling you a story, an interesting story, of what happened and what some of you know happened around 1990, started in 1990 and went all the way up to 1991. And it lasted about actually 5 months. But the build up to it started in 1980 when there was a war between Iraq and Iran. And because Iran had gone into the Islamic Revolution, remember, and the 1979 Islamic Revolution, and had become very staunchly Islamic, and you remember, had held hostages of the American embassy and held them there. So now Iran and Iraq went into some kind of war, And America had to take sides, and they decided to take sides with Saddam Hussein and Iraq because they were the lesser evil, so to speak. Because the Ayatollahs in Iran had gone full-blown, Islamic revolution kind of thing, death to America and so on, and we're singing that. So even if America did not trust Saddam, and actually he was on their list of states that sponsor terrorism, they kind of thought that it would be terrible for the Middle East and American influence in that place if Iran beat Iraq in a war and took over the Middle East. And then also, more than that, Saudi Arabia was also very, very concerned about Iranian influence, and he still is concerned today up to now. Why? Because Saudi Arabia is like the capital of Sunni Islam, and Iran is the capital of Shia Islam. And Saudi Arabia is very worried that if Iran's influence, especially military influence, spreads even up to this day, that they will spread their kind of Shia Islam to the detriment of Sunni Islam, and Saudi Arabia is wary of that. So you have to understand that at the time Saudi Arabia was very worried, and so were so many other Sunni Muslim countries worried about how the war is going to turn out between Saddam Hussein in Iraq and the Ayatollahs in Iran. Then America was also concerned that if there was an Islamic revolution in Iran, which kind of overthrew their king, who was a Western puppet, and then took over. And now if Iran was to spread that kind of thing into the rest of the Middle East, they were going to chase America and the West out of it. So in light of that, America decided that Saddam Hussein was the lesser evil. So they sponsored him to fight against Iran. First of all, it was a very small sponsorship, you know, just a bit of training, a bit of ammunition, a bit of intelligence on, you know, what was piling up and so on. Because, of course, they had superior satellites and all that, so they would tell him exactly what to do and so on. So the war continued for 8 years. Between 1980 and 1988, there was a war between Iraq and Iran. America first removed Iraq off the list of states that sponsor terrorism, and that was to allow them to go ahead and help them. Eventually, of course, the war ended with no apparent winner. Iran stayed in Iran, Iraq stayed in Iraq, Saddam Hussein remained who he is, and Iranian influence was not spread. Saudi Arabia was happy, and everyone else seemed to be happy that things had happened like that. But then the only person who was not happy was Saddam, because in that period Kuwait had lent him a lot of money to fight Iran, and it was a very expensive war, by the way, for Iraq at the time, extremely expensive war for Iraq. Iran somehow seemed to handle it better financially, but Saddam was bleeding at the end of the war, and he had a huge debt in the billions of dollars, I think about $30 billion debt to Kuwait, and then who had been giving him money and, you know, helping him to fund the war. And then he also had a huge debt to Saudi Arabia, who had also been giving him money and a lot of other things. So now, of course, because Saudi Arabia had their own interests in fighting Iran, and so did Kuwait, Saddam felt that these people should just write off the debt, because first of all, Iraq was suffering so much financially, and then these people were demanding for their money, saying that it's a legitimate debt, Iraq has to pay it back at some stage, and Iraq is saying, well, I was fighting Iran not just for myself, I was fighting Iran for all you two as well, because Saudi Arabia, you also have your issues with Iran, and Kuwait also has its issues with Iran. So why should you give me money and then I pay you back? So there was that impasse. And then, but those countries insisted that, no, these are debts and you have to pay them back. So Saddam was not happy. And then Kuwait went and did something else. First of all, there was a place called, I think, Ramallah, where there are oil wells, which kind of cross over between Iraq and Kuwait. And then Saddam was accusing Kuwait of doing what they call slant drilling, drilling oil, knowing very well that it is going to slant from Iraq and come. So you dig a deeper place, and then, you know, the oil from Iraq is going to slant kind of and come, and, you know, you dig it up from here. So he accused them of that, and then there was a dispute over that place, Ramallah, which is between the two countries. And then Saddam was still angry that Kuwait insisted that he pays the debt that he incurred trying to fight Iran, even if Kuwait also had an interest in Iran's defeat. So there was a number of things. But what actually ticked it off is that Kuwait was overproducing oil, almost at the, you know, encouragement of America and George Bush. And that wasn't good because the Kuwait, you know, emir was really in the hands of America. And he was overproducing oil. And Saddam said that the OPEC countries had decided that they produce a certain amount of oil so that they keep the price at a certain, you know, somewhere. At the time, it was $18 a barrel. But now when Kuwait overproduced oil and Saudi Arabia also overproduced oil, the price of oil came down to $10 a barrel. And Kuwait could afford it. Saudi Arabia could afford it. Iran is the one country that could not afford it because they were the ones who were, you know, in debt, heavily indebted, number one. And they were the ones who were bleeding. They were bleeding seriously. Actually, they were bleeding to the tune of about $7 billion a year because of the overproduction, because of the price of oil falling from $18 a barrel to $10 a barrel. So Saddam warned Kuwait and told them, do not overproduce oil. Do not overproduce oil. But Kuwait, of course, was listening to America. And when the price of fuel goes from $18 a barrel to $10 a barrel, guess who was the biggest beneficiary? America, because they were the ones who were dependent on Middle East energy. So America was happy that Saudi Arabia and Kuwait were overproducing. Saddam was bleeding badly. And then, of course, the relationship between Saddam and America deteriorated after the Iran war. They only needed him to defeat Iran. As soon as Iran was defeated, the relationship totally deteriorated. So there was a bit of an issue there. And so it boiled over and so on. Now, so Saddam threatened that he's going to go and annex Kuwait because Kuwait was once a province, apparently, of Iraq in the Ottoman Empire times. We're talking 16th, 17th century. And of course, they told him, no, you cannot do that. Kuwait is now a sovereign country. So Saddam continued with his threats. And Kuwait continued overproducing. And Saudi Arabia continued overproducing. The prices of oil continued staying very low. Iraq continued suffering financially. So eventually, around August of 1990, when the attention of the world had been switched away from Middle East, now that was the time of the fall of the communist wall, and you know, the Soviet Union had crumbled, and the fall of the communist empire, the Iron Curtain, and so on, which fell in 1989. So now America was in a period of triumphalism. You know, we are on top, we are triumphant, communism has come down. Now the whole world is going to be capitalist, the Soviet Union is no longer, and so on and so forth. So in around that period when America was thinking in that direction and were, you know, excited and triumphalist and so on, Saddam Hussein moves his forces. And finally, America sees him at the border of Kuwait. They see their satellite images capture a huge Iraq army presence at the border of Kuwait. And then they say, what's happening here? They think Saddam is bluffing, but he's not. In August, he rolls his tanks into Kuwait, comes, cuts off Kuwait city from the rest of the city, and moves in. Let's just say, in a matter of about 12 hours, Kuwait had fallen. They tried to put up some kind of military resistance, but it was no match for Iraq because Iraq had already, first of all, had been in an 8-year war, so they were, you know, all this war prepared and so on. So it did not work. And then ultimately, they had to, you know, give up. So they surrendered and Iraq took over Kuwait in a very, very short time. Now, the events that happened after that are the ones actually that are of interest to the Bible prophecy. To, you know, our bit of Bible prophecy. So the question is exactly what happened after that. Now, when Iraq went and took over, you know, Kuwait, then America started issuing, you know, warnings, dire warnings, pull out your forces, do this. And then Iraq initially did not want to actually fight a war with America. They were not interested in that. But they saw that as a way of negotiating. If we pull out of Kuwait, and so they kind of tried to put up some kind of negotiation. If we pull out of Kuwait, the number one, Kuwait is going to stop overproducing so that the price of oil goes back up a bit and we stop bleeding financially. Then they also had a negotiation over that place, Ramallah, which they felt was, you know, partially owned by Iraq, but which, of course, was now, you know, caved under the territory of Kuwait. and a few other negotiations that they wanted to put up with America, you know, continue sponsoring us this, sponsoring us that, and if you do ABC, we shall pull out, and without the need for war. And initially, actually, George Bush, at a time when he was celebrating, you know, the falling of the Soviet Union, was not interested in going ahead with this war. And but then eventually, it was actually the person who convinced all the allies, America and their allies, to take part in this war was British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher. She's the one who went and told George Bush that if Saddam actually does this and gets away with it, even if he does not eventually take over Kuwait, even if he negotiates a serious deal with America and its allies in exchange for exiting Kuwait, still he will be seen as a winner, and then it will encourage so many bad things. And also, one of the countries that was worried was the United Arab Emirates, the Dubai and so on. They felt that these countries with military might, if they feel they can just go and overrun these countries, like the UAE, which have economic might, and then eventually they get a deal, that's not going to be a good precedent. And that's what Margaret Thatcher was telling George Bush, the older George Bush. So eventually she convinced him that unfortunately this is a war we have to fight. Either that or Saddam Hussein agrees to exit Kuwait unconditionally. And yet Saddam was actually not willing to exit unconditionally. So eventually America starts moving around to look for allies. And the purpose of the allies, number one, was how to fund the war. They were not very interested in funding that war because they did not see any real reward from funding it. So what did they do? They went around, they told Saudi Arabia, you are going to help us. First of all, give us your territory to launch our airstrikes from, number one, but also fund much of the war. Saudi Arabia agreed to fund at the rate of almost 20 billion, 15 or something billion dollars. So they went to the Emir of Kuwait, who of course was not in a position of power in this negotiation. He was living in some Sheraton in another country. And they went to him and told him that, okay, we are going to install you back as the Emir of your country. However, this is the amount of money that you are going to pay. Of course, in the situation that he was in, he agreed. He said we'll pay. But also, the other interest in them getting those allies was to make sure they have Arab allies with them, so that it is not seen as America attacking, Arab countries. So then they went also, of course, they went to Turkey, they went to other countries. Eventually, America had 39 financial allies in what was called the Desert Storm. Eventually, when they got around to the Desert Storm, they had 39 people who contributed financially, so many, and there were many, some of them were Argentina and so on. Many of them were really, really not even interested in committing their troops, but they just contributed some money or some, small support here and there. But between Kuwait and Saudi Arabia, almost half of the war was funded. Those are the countries which funded the war most. Actually, America did very little in form of funding that war, apart from, of course, fighting it. So, anyhow, so America collected all its allies, and Saddam Hussein continued to refuse. From August, they kept on telling him. So, UN eventually put a deadline of January 15th. I remember that time I was young and were in school, and you know how school people can be, and young people can be, and when UN and America said that they have given Saddam a deadline of up to 15th January to withdraw unconditionally from Kuwait, and Saddam was saying, no way that is going to happen, then, the excitement that we had, we are waiting for this war. Of course, when you grow up, you think different. But that time, we were trying to see who is going to win between America and Saddam. And Saddam had made himself out to be really, really big. And, the whole world was divided between Saddam and America. Who is going to win? There's a reason why I'm telling you this. Of course, it's connected to Bible prophecy, so do not think I'm just telling you a wonderful story. So anyhow, so January 15th came. Saddam hadn't pulled out. There were some very brief, attempts at avoiding the war, but they all ended in nothing. So January 15th came and passed. Iraq was still very firmly in Kuwait. Then finally something happened. And guess what happened? January 16th, America launching their strikes from Saudi Arabia started bombing Iraq. first of all, bombing Iraq in Iraq and bombing Iraq in Kuwait, Iraq installations in Kuwait. And the bombardment continued for weeks, I think about 8 weeks, 7 weeks or something like that. And they bombarded. Then eventually, they decided that we are going to go on a ground offensive. And that's when Saddam was threatening that, okay, you have your superior planes and superior technologies. That was the first time wars were covered on television. That's the war which made CNN. Before that, nobody knew CNN. But because somehow CNN got an entry point into covering the Gulf War, everybody wanted to watch CNN to watch the Gulf War. And after the Gulf War, CNN, you know, grew and became the big station that it eventually became. So, anyhow, January 16th, the war continued about 7 weeks. Then afterwards, in February, they said they are going into an offensive, ground offensive. Saddam threatened, he did what? But eventually, American and British ground troops swept into Kuwait and went. And with very little resistance, really. The Iraqi forces had been disconnected away from their command because of the air bombardment. They had been disconnected away from resources, from supplies, and so on. So they were disillusioned. So it was easy, eventually, for America to go and overrun Kuwait. So they went, took Iraq out of Kuwait, and installed the Emir of Kuwait. But before Saddam could leave Kuwait, he did something which is very important. He went and set on fire 700 oil wells, very rich Kuwait oil wells. He set them on fire, 707 to be precise, set them on fire, and they were burning. And they burned for a very long time. And for months, a period of about 5 months, the thick smoke that came from those oil wells covered the skies over Kuwait. And it would be dark in the middle of the day because there was a thick, thick layer of smoke that was blocking the sun as those oil wells burnt in Kuwait. So eventually, of course, Saddam was, the American forces went, entered even deep into Iraq, and they went and they, you know, eventually Saddam was forced to surrender unconditionally and came out of the war really as a sour loser. But so many people felt that America should have actually deposed Saddam at that time and installed a puppet regime in Iraq. But many of the American forces, including the Secretary of, you know, of Defense of America, said that was not necessary because then they would have to be involved in the running of Iraq and it would be a long thing. So they said, now that Saddam has been taught a lesson, we don't need to do that again. But remember, it was not taught a lesson. He came back stronger and stronger until eventually the son of George Bush, of the first George Bush who had gone to there, his son is the one who came and finished it and actually finished off Saddam. Anyhow, but that was just an extra bit. That doesn't connect to what we are talking about. Now, here is what connects to what we are talking about. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star falling from heaven, and to him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke rose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. Now, when I read this, this is exactly what happened at that time when he set the oil wells on fire. And that's what the scripture is talking about here. The sun and the moon were darkened, the oil, I mean, of course, bottomless pit. It's not going to say oil wells, you know. That's not what it's going to say in the year 2000. So he saw a deep pit as if bottomless. Then he comes and sets it on fire, which is exactly what happened. I'll read it again. Then the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fallen from heaven to the earth. To him was given the key to the bottomless pit. And he opened the bottomless pit, and smoke rose out of the pit like the smoke of a great furnace. Okay? He opened it, smoke rose out like the smoke of a great furnace. You know what that means. He set it on fire. So the sun and the air were darkened because of the smoke of the pit. That's exactly what happened. But then he says, then out of the smoke came locusts. Now here is what happened. When Saddam realized that America was going to come and overpower him, that's when he set the oil wells on fire. Now, when I saw, you know, the word Apache. Apache, I don't know if it's Apache or Apache, but anyway, APACHE, helicopters, which were great grand war weapons, which had been manufactured in America, but nobody had seen them until the Gulf War when people were seeing them on CNN. And these things actually have an appearance that's interesting, because if you go and check out the look of the Apache, it has a propeller that is not straight but kind of falls down, you know, slants down a bit. And then when it's moving and, you know, shifting like this, it looks like it's covered in some kind of hair, because, you know, that thing is going around. And then it has something interesting, that Apache helicopter. It has like as if two eyes. So when you look at it, its shape is actually kind of looks like a locust when you look at it, because it has eyes, you know, eyes like for a locust coming out like this, which kind of look like a man's eyes, but then they kind of look like a locust's eyes. Then the shape of it is like for a locust, and even its crown. So when I looked at it, and when I saw those Apache helicopters coming out of course, not that time. That time we didn't have access. I was in secondary school in Namiriango College. We didn't have access to CNN. But I'm saying, when I looked at the pictures from way back, much later now, when I was doing my study on Bible prophecy, I actually said, this is what the Apostle John saw at this time, or actually Prophet John at this time. This is what he saw those days, because I saw those choppers coming out of the smoke and coming to attack Iraq installations in Kuwait. And it was a very interesting feeling. And then I later on learned that the name Abaddon or Apollyon means destroyer. You see, it says the shape of the locusts, you see now he's calling them locusts, which they actually look like, was like the horses prepared for battle. On their heads were crowns of something like gold. Now that thing actually has that Apache thing, when you look at it closely, it actually has some kind of crown on top of it. At the previous Watchman conference, I actually demonstrated this, because I got a picture and I put a locust next to an Apache helicopter. And I said that if I was John 2,000 years ago describing, and if God showed me this Apache coming out of smoke, I would, and I had to use the language that I had available to me 2,000 years ago, I would most definitely call it a locust, because they look so much alike in shape and in appearance. And then he says, verse 11, that's of Revelation chapter 9, says, and they had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is Abaddon. Now Abaddon means destroyer. Even if you check in the cross references actually of your Bible, what it puts there is literally destroyer. Okay. They had as king over them the angel of the bottomless pit, whose name in Hebrew is called Abaddon, or destroyer. But in Greek, is also called Apollyon, which means the same thing. Actually, one means literally destruction, and the other one means destroyer. Abaddon and Apollyon, but it means the same thing. Now, the interesting thing, then I found out later on from a certain Bible prophecy teacher who had followed this, I found out that the name Saddam means destroyer. That's what it actually means, okay? Destroyer. And I found out that the reason he was called Saddam, which is a very unique name for somebody to be called even in that part of the world, is because when his mother was pregnant with him and was giving birth to him, it was a very difficult birth. And actually, she almost died because of giving birth to Saddam Hussein. And she was actually crossed over into the hospitals in Israel. And that's where they helped her give birth to Saddam. And because she was literally saying, this baby almost destroyed me, she called him Saddam, which means destroyer. So I'm convinced that the fifth trumpet actually happened about this time, because it says 5 months. The war in its entirety actually lasted about 5 months. Okay? And when I saw the pictures of how the sky looked at the time when the oil wells were on fire, there are pictures there. Go and check out. You can go and check them out, those oil wells on fire when Saddam set ablaze 707 oil wells in Kuwait. And you see the sky, and it is dark during the day. So that was the fifth trumpet. So we passed the fifth trumpet. So that whole Iraq war, by the way, it involved 65 countries altogether. It was the biggest alliance put together since the Second World War. It was a huge alliance of nations that went to fight Saddam Hussein. That's why the war was swift. That's why it was very expensive, but was not paid for by one country. It was paid for by a number of countries. It cost $60 billion. That was quite an amount of money in 1991. And as I said, most of that money was paid by the oil of Kuwait or of Saudi Arabia. At least half of, $32 billion of it, to be precise, was paid for by Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, because they are the ones who had a lot to lose. Other countries paid a little, Britain, America, and so on. Anyhow, but the reason I told you 65 countries were involved is because that was a huge coalition of nations, the biggest since the Second World War. And there's a reason why I'm saying that. Okay, now the fourth trumpet. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened, a third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. Now, what does this mean? Let me first read the whole of it. Verse 13 says, and I looked, verse 13 of Revelation chapter 8 says, and I looked and heard an angel flying through the midst of the heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth because of the remaining blasts of the trumpet of the three angels who are about to sound. So, but this is how it describes the fourth trumpet. Then the fourth angel sounded, and a third of the sun was struck, a third of the moon, and a third of the stars, so that a third of them were darkened, and a third of the day did not shine, and likewise the night. So now what this means is, like, the days are reduced by one third. So a day is reduced by one third. So if the sun would shine this amount of time, for a third of that time it does not shine. Okay? Then the moon likewise, which rules the night, a third does not shine. Then the stars. Okay? And so the night is shorter, the day is shorter by one third. So, which means that at that time God says, when that trumpet sounds, the God kind of compresses time, and time looks shorter and appears shorter. Time becomes shorter, you know. It's not like it's going to be 16 hours instead of 24. No, it still remains 24 hours, but the 24 hours kind of feel like 16 hours. Or let me put it this way. The 12 months of the year seem to rush very fast, and they look like 18 months. And of course, I've been talking to people who say, but these days, the years rush so fast. The other day, we were having elections on January 14th. Now, we are in the middle of the year, June. You know, June something. And before we know it, it will be October, November, December, and the year will be gone. Very fast spent, and you can very, almost, they are rushing. And now, for the people who are older at the time, maybe about people about my age, who existed a bit before this time, you know that time a year seemed to be much longer. The year seemed to drag, and you know, it goes, and then it's January, then then it's March, then you seem to wait ages, then it's June, then you wait, and then eventually it's December, and the year seems to drag. But now, January, everything rushes so fast, the next thing is December. It might look like it's imaginary. It's just imaginary, you know, that time we were young, now we've grown up, or maybe it's just, you know, because things are moving faster these days, you know, we're moving in the faster world. Yes, that's true. But then also, it says here in the scripture that God will compress the days. And now, where is the origin of this? Because remember, Jesus says that his coming is going to be like the birth pangs of a woman. The birth pangs. Now, the birth pangs of a woman, if you know how it is, you know, when a woman is about to give birth, you know, she, at the beginning, when still far away, she gets like a pang, a pain, a sharp pain. Then it takes a long time before the next pain comes. Then it takes a long time before the next pain comes. But as time goes on and on and on, the pangs become, you know, faster and faster. And remember, Jesus compared his return to birth pangs in Matthew chapter 24. So eventually they become faster, faster, faster. Now, if eventually you would get a kapang now, then after maybe 8 hours, then after another 8 hours, then eventually they become 6 hours, 5 hours. Then eventually the birth, as you draw closer to giving birth, they start coming, you know, in minutes, 45 minutes, 30 minutes, then the next thing very fast. So now God, everything now becomes faster, faster, faster as we draw towards the close, because it is the same way as the giving birth. The earth is groaning to give birth to the new earth, to the new heaven and the new earth. This one, actually, its time is coming to an end. And Jesus also compared it okay, not Jesus, but the Bible compared it in Isaiah chapter 51 and verse, I think, 9. He says, the earth grows old like a garment. I think it's Isaiah 51 verse 9. It says, the earth grows old like a garment. Now, you know how something old behaves. I mean, a garment, anything else that you can think of, how they grow old. In Isaiah 51 verse 6, it says, lift your eyes to the heavens and look on the earth beneath, for the heavens will vanish away like smoke. And it says, and the earth will grow old like a garment. Okay? And those who dwell in it will die in a like manner. But my salvation will be forever, and my righteousness will not be abolished. Now that's Isaiah 51 verse 6. That's the verse I actually want. He says, the earth will grow old like a garment, and those who dwell in it like it. So he's comparing the earth to a cloth, a garment, which grows old. And you know how a garment behaves when it grows old. But then he also says, also the people in it will be like that garment, if you know what I mean. So imagine, like, I'll give you an example. When somebody grows old and is really, really old, everything is different. You know, previously you get something, you treat it, it goes away and it goes completely. But as you grow old, you treat something, it goes, another one comes up, another one comes up, another one comes up. So you seem to be treating one thing after the other after the other. And that is just your body telling you that it was not meant to last forever, and its time is up. So the earth in which we live was also not built to last forever. It's all, okay, I'll give you an example. It's almost like a car which is really old. Now, it starts behaving in weird ways. You park it in the garage today and there is no problem with it. The next day you go and start it and it does not start. And then you have to repair something. So you repair one thing after that. When a car is new, you don't go through that. You just know if you park it, tomorrow you go and start it and drive and it's going to be okay. But as it gets older, it starts behaving that way. Now, that's how the earth is. The earth, as we grow towards the end of its time, it starts becoming funny, starts behaving in a funny way. So now, the fourth trumpet is the reducing of time. And I believe this happened around some time ago, because definitely the fifth trumpet happened and the fourth has to happen before the fifth. And then the third one, I know what it is. The third, I'm reading from verse 10 of Revelation chapter 8. Then the third angel sounded, and a great star fell from heaven, burning like a torch, and it fell on the third of the rivers and on the springs of water. And the name of the star is Wormwood, and the third of the waters became wormwood, and men died from the water because it was made bitter. Now, what does that mean? This means that in 1986, in the country, in the USSR, but what would now be called Ukraine, in the current division of countries after the fall of the Soviet Union, something happened. There was a Russian nuclear reactor which was in a place called Chernobyl, Chernobyl, Chernobyl. There was a Russian nuclear thing which was being built there, a nuclear plant. And now those people made, they were trying to test something. So they removed the water that caused the plant, trying to see how far it can go without, you know, that water. But it started heating up very fast. So by the time they replaced the water to try and cool it, it was too late. So it heated, and then exploded. A huge explosion happened in that time. And nuclear radiation went across all that place, and people died as a result of it. And now the thing is, with nuclear radiation, it goes and even hits the rivers, the waters. So water was made, you know, had a lot of nuclear radiation all throughout a lot of Eastern Europe. It went all the way up to Romania and, you know, Czechoslovakia that time, which would now be so many countries, Czech Republic, Slovenia, Slovakia, and so on. And went into, you know, Yugoslavia, a lot of countries in Eastern Europe, and affected the waters from there. And there was a lot of radiation in the parks and what, and so many people died. Actually, you go and check out the Chernobyl disaster. You can go and check it out on your internet, the Chernobyl disaster, and find out what they say about how many people died as a result of it. But there were so many people who died as a result of it, and especially as a result of water. Now, that was 1986, but I can tell you even until the early 2000s, there were children who were being born deformed and with all sorts of deformities and half certain parts of their bodies either not functional or not there altogether because they were, you know, their parents had been exposed to this nuclear radiation. It was a very, very dangerous thing. And then it says here, so I'll read again, it says, the third angel sounded, a great suffering fell from heaven. Now, of course, this explosion which goes up, John seeing it is going to say a star fell from heaven. But, you know, like a star fell from heaven, like that would be the way he would describe it because he can't say there was a nuclear whatever. But then when it exploded, it was like pew, something huge all the way into the heavens and a lot of ash, a lot of nuclear radiation. And then he says, burning like a torch, and it fell on a third of the waters and on the springs of the water. And now that caused the waters to be bitter. Okay? The name of the star is Wormwood. A third of the waters became Wormwood. That means became like bitter. And many men died from the water because it was made bitter. That is because of the radiation, the nuclear radiation. Many people died as a result of it. That was in 1986 in what would be now called Ukraine, but was what was called at that time the Soviet Union. So that was the third trumpet. Now the second trumpet, interesting. Then now it describes one thing which happened. It does not describe the entirety of everything. It says, and then the second angel sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. Now here he's describing the nuclear bomb which was in Hiroshima. He says, and you go and look at those pictures, and you see it looks like a mountain burning with fire after those bombs were thrown by America in those Japanese towns of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And he says, then they sounded, and something like a great mountain burning with fire was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood. Of course, what happens, because of the radiation from the atomic bombs, the water which comes out of it has a certain kind of reddish hue. You can go and check it out. It has a certain reddish hue which goes, and when it affects, you know, the water kind of becomes a bit red, not entirely red like blood, but you know, has a bit of a reddish hue. And he says, and the third of the living creatures in the sea died, and the third of the ships were destroyed. Now, the ships is what I was interested in, because in the Second World War, I found out that there were about 36,000 ships which were sunk, and actually, altogether, there were 108,000 ships involved in the Second World War. That is exactly one third of the ships. Now, the other, I cannot completely vouch for it, one third of the living things in the sea. But I know that a lot of the things which were in, around that sea of around Japan, a lot of the living creatures there died as a result of that atomic bomb. So I would say that the Second World War was the second trumpet. Now the First World War, I believe, was the first trumpet. The description here is not something I can entirely relate to what I know, but I know the First World War is the first war which had actual chemical weapons, eh? By that time it was just some kind of gas which they would release, and then people would run away and choke and so on. And but that gas affected the grass a lot and affected the vegetation. And if you look at pictures from the First World War, and there's some interesting pictures, you'll see that the whole vegetation in places where that gas was used, the vegetation was completely raised out. Now, this is what the scripture says. The first angel sounded, and hail and fire followed, mingled with blood, and they were thrown into the earth, and the third of the trees were burnt, and all the grass was burnt up. Now, of course, when it says all the grass, unless in some instances where I've really checked it out, it's talking about all of the grass in the places that were involved. So if the First World War was in Europe, it doesn't mean all the grass in America, in Africa, and what, no. He describes it that way, because remember, he is... Imagine 2,000 years ago, John is there. Then the Lord carries him and takes him almost 1,900 years later to the First World War. And he's standing there and he's seeing in a field, let's say, and he's seeing the whole grass, has been destroyed because of this gas, the first, gas that was used in the First World War, the First War where people, introduced this sort of chemical weapons. And then he's seeing the gas. So the grass has all withered and died, and the trees have all withered and died. So he does not know what part of the earth he's in. He does not know what fraction of the earth this covers. So he says all the grass, because that's what he sees. He says all the grass burnt up and all the grass did this. And the Lord, having shown him, will leave him to describe it in his language. In your language, he does not like, of course, with the inspiration of the Spirit, but he shows you something, then you have to describe it in a language that is familiar to you. And I've showed you that about Bible prophecy. So now, let's rush through this because we are coming to the end of this. So I would say the First World War, the First Trumpet, Second World War, Second Trumpet, the Chernobyl disaster. And by the way, what I didn't tell you about the Chernobyl disaster is that it says here the name of the star is Wormwood. Now, the name of the place where it's happened is called Chernobyl in the Ukrainian language. And the English word for Chernobyl is Wormwood. In other words, if you are reading the Bible in Ukrainian language, it would say the name of the star is Chernobyl. That's the word for Wormwood. So, and that's what makes it almost sure that this is what he was talking about with the third trumpet, apart from the other descriptions, which are also true for this third trumpet. So now we know the first trumpet, what it was, second trumpet, Second World War, and he describes in beat the first war, where actually the only war where nuclear bombs were used, and by America, because Japan had become a serious problem with their kamikaze fighters and so on. So America felt they needed to use one thing to completely demoralize them. And as soon as they bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Japan surrendered, and that was the end of the war. So that was 1945, second trumpet. Third trumpet, 1986, the Chernobyl disaster. Chernobyl means Wormwood. The fourth one, that one we cannot know for sure, because God says at some stage he quickens the time. And that is so that a year seems to move fast, as if it's two-thirds of a year, as if one-third has been removed. A day seems to move faster, as if it's just two-thirds of a day, and so on. The fifth trumpet, I told you about the Gulf War. The sixth trumpet, I told you, that one hasn't happened. We are waiting for it. It's the River Euphrates War. It's the one we are waiting for. Then after that, we shall be waiting for the seventh trumpet, which is the return of the Lord Jesus Christ on earth. So those are the that's a bit of the trumpets. So I think now this kind of helps you understand how the book of Revelation goes anyhow. So thank you so much for listening to us. And I continue to encourage you to sow a seed towards what we are doing, taking this whole message and in some cases interpreting it to local languages and taking it to all this country, different radio stations across the country. So I encourage you to sow a seed towards this ministry. And of course, if you've missed any of the previous messages on this series, you can go to www.ugwatchman.com. You can also go there to sow a seed. There are different ways you can do that, regardless of where it is you are in the world. www.ugwatchman.com. Follow the prompts and you can sow a seed towards this to make sure this message moves across as far as possible. Also, if you do not want to use that, there are numbers that we use for sowing seed as well as for communicating to this ministry. And I'm going to give you those numbers. They are 0780-292-555. I'll give that again, 0780-292-555. That's the MTN one. The Airtel one is 0755-292-555. 0755-292-555. 0755-292-555. Thank you so much for listening to The Watchman. And encourage your friends to listen in as well and understand the times in which we are living. Have yourselves a wonderful evening. Make us sway before the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Cosmic.
That was The Watchman. Tune in next week. Join us at our Friday fellowship, 5:30 p.m. at Plot 9 Kulubia Road, Bugolobi. To connect to the anointing upon The Watchman, you can give through the ministry mobile money lines, that is +256 780 292 555 or +256 755 292 555. Follow us on our Facebook page, The Watchman, on Twitter at UG Watchman, Instagram at @the_UG Watchman, and on YouTube, Ugandan Watchman. Or send us an email to info@ugwatchman.com. For more information on previous messages, on how to give, resources and more, visit our website at ugwatchman.com. The Watchman, the King, is coming.